Welcome to Beyond Blathers, the podcast where we dive deeper into the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing New Horizons. I'm Sophia Osborne.
And I'm Olivia DeBercier.
And if you want to support the show, you can check out our merch store at etsy.com/shop/beyondblathers. We've restocked our sticker sheets and they are honestly so awesome, if I do say so myself. I think I can say that because Olivia made them, so I think they're amazing.
I also think they're amazing. And I made them.
Yeah. There is this insect one, there's a fossil one, and there's two sea creature ones. They're professionally printed on weatherproof vinyl, and so you can put them on your water bottles, notebooks, laptops. Someone put them on their fish tank. You can do whatever you want with them. So would highly recommend checking that out.
Yeah. I also like to brag, but I sold them to a bunch of professional entomologists over the past couple of weeks, and they're really excited about them. So I can tell you the accuracy of the stickers is good. They're real bugs, but like cute and adorable. So yeah, you can get those. You can also get free shipping if you spend $20 Canadian or more at our shop. So that's basically just a couple sticker sheets or like a sticker sheet plus some die cut stickers. So lots of options there.
And as always, you can also join our Patreon to receive a monthly sticker and print in the mail.
It's possible you noticed that we didn't have an episode last week, so I apologize for that. It's been a very exciting, busy couple weeks. A couple weeks ago, I was at the Entomological Society of Canada's conference. So all of these entomologists around Canada, we all get together once a year and we talk about our science and we hang out and meet each other, and it's a very good time. So last year, we had a really huge conference between the United States' Entomology Society and Canada's, which only happens like once every 3 to 5 years. So it won't happen for another 5 years, which is kind of a bummer because it was really fun last year. But it was really nice to just spend time with other Canadians and see what kind of science is going on. So I got to present some of my updates to my research, which I definitely need to do. I was kind of hoping to have more updates at this point, but that's besides the point. It was really cool to see what everyone was working on. If you're interested in, I figure I should say what the Canadian entomologists are particularly intrigued by. And it seems like a couple really, I don't know, like popular topics are like these things called psyllids, which are like these little hemipteran pests of agriculture. And so there was lots of research on that, lots of research on forest pests and a lot of pest stuff in general. So let me tell you, if you want to get a well-funded research project in the field of entomology, do pests. You get good money. There's a lot going on in that field. I do not do pests, and so it wasn't a lot of stuff that was relevant to my research, but it was still really neat to learn about. And it's always good fun talking to all these people who are working on different things than you in other parts of the country. And like, Canada's really big, so you know, it's really fun to get to talk to people from the East Coast about what they're working on, because it's such a different, kind of a different world of what's of things happening over there. And maybe that's a little boring, but just I don't know, in case people are wondering, like, what are the entomologists talking about? That's it.
Yeah, definitely. I know I enjoyed getting updates from you while you were at the conference, and it just sounds like a fun time for people who do like bugs.
Yeah. I should also say, like, together. It was in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and I've never been to Saskatchewan. And it was pretty well what I expected Saskatchewan to be. Like, we drove and like, it's just like nothing but flat farmland, like flatter than Alberta somehow. And it was like, okay, this is not to hate on Saskatchewan, but it was like, honestly really funny, because we're driving and we see like the like you're leaving Alberta sign, and we're waiting for the you've entered Saskatchewan sign, and like, I kid you not, about like 30 seconds after we passed that sign, it was like someone turned the saturation down on the world. Like, everything suddenly became so gray. And I don't know if it's just the type of like crops that they're growing in Saskatchewan or something, but it was really funny. Like, if you're not Canadian, you might not know the like Saskatchewan stereotype, but it's just like the stereotype is that it's just like the most boring place in Canada, like just flat farmland. I don't agree with that. I actually had a great time in Saskatchewan. We saw mink in the Saskatoon River Valley. That was so cool. I don't see a lot of mink. Actually, I don't think I've ever seen a mink in the wild.
Well, I told you you can see mink on Saturna where my dad lives.
I know. Well, I did see a mustelid at your house. I saw one at your house that had eaten something, but I don't think it was a mink. I think it was a long-tailed weasel. So it was really cool, though. It was like running away from your porch and it had like a mouse or something.
It was probably a mink. I don't know if we have long-tailed
weasels. Maybe it was a mink.
We have a lot of mink, though, because...
Yeah, you know what? It may have been a mink now that I'm thinking back on it. It was before the days when I was good at ID.
There used to be a mink farm on Tumbo Island, which is like right beside Saturna. So there's a lot of like feral mink.
Yeah, that would make sense. They're popular as a fur animal. Yeah, I guess the one really beautiful thing we did see in Saskatchewan was it's the time of the migration of like the swans and the snow geese. And so there was a time when we were driving back and there was this like absolutely colossal flock of snow geese that we like drove up to in the farmland, and they were just like in the thousands, and the sound was incredible. Like they were all just like making their happy little snow goose sounds, and there was this like little group of cows that walked up to us and looked really confused about why we were there. And then my supervisor John, as we're driving away, spotted like a garter snake, and he like leapt out of the car to grab the snake, and we all jumped out, and John's son Benny was in the front seat like marking quizzes from class, and the doors were open. And so as we're like looking at the snake, all the quizzes start flying out of the car. And it was just like chaos. We're like running after all these quizzes. I will say they all made it back into the truck safely, but it was very funny. So I don't know. You can have fun in Saskatchewan.
I'm sure you can. Well, I guess we're doing something that's very not Saskatchewan related or insect related.
This is totally, I think maybe I'm just like bugged out. For a second, I just needed to like read about something that wasn't bugs, because I also had like a big exam this week, which is the main reason we didn't record this week, because I was studying. So I just like couldn't really bear to read something else about bugs. Today we're talking about mahi-mahi, which is a fish in the amazing ocean so far away from Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. Before we dive into it, let's see what Blathers has to say. So if you bring a mahi-mahi to Blathers, he'll say, "The mahi-mahi is an ocean fish known for its wide, somewhat cute face." I just have to somewhat cute face. Me.
At least he's being honest about it. It's like almost cute, but not quite.
Yeah, it's known for its somewhat cute face. Okay. It can reach over 6 feet long. It is known by different names, including dolphinfish, even though it has no relation to dolphins. They only live in warm tropical waters, which perhaps explains the relaxed, happy look on their faces. They're somewhat cute faces.
I feel like
I'm obsessed.
That could be a really niche Animal Crossing reference in a dating profile.
I'm known for my wide, somewhat cute face. My friends would describe me as having a wide, somewhat cute face.
I also love that he has to clarify that it indeed has no relation to dolphins after specifying that it is a fish. In case anyone was unclear. But
it's so funny.
Yeah. And like, also he's wrong. They don't only live in warm tropical waters. I looked at like, okay, this is going to be, again, really nerdy, but I looked at this website called GBIF, which basically, if you want to find out the range of a species, it's a really good place to look. Like, it's like a research quality website. And they clearly go up to like pretty temperate waters, I would say. Like, you could definitely catch them around Canada. So I don't really know what he's talking about there.
Really? You can find them around Canada?
Yeah. Like, okay, let me search this again. Yeah, so you can find, like, there are some reports of it around, like, Vancouver Island. So, and like upwards, like northern Japan and then around Europe. And like even there's a couple points around England or like Great Britain. So yeah, like you can find them actually pretty far north and far south.
That's cool. Wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine like that's a common thing for them, but it's certainly possible. But yeah, let's talk about the name. So as Blather says, the mahi-mahi is also known as the dolphin fish. The Latin name is Coryphaena hippurus, which is what I recommend searching if you're trying to find information about them. Because if you search up mahi-mahi, you just get like 1,000 fish recipes. So it actually was kind of a pain trying to research them because I'm like, just tell me about mahi-mahi, the fish, like the ecology. But I guess it's not usually what people are looking for. I should also mention that there is another dolphin fish within this genus, and it's called Coryphaena aquicellus. And it's relatively similar to Hipporus, but its range is just a bit different. But today we'll pretty much just be talking about Coryphaena hippurus specifically. The name mahi-mahi, however, comes from the Hawaiian language, and it means very strong, which makes a lot of sense because these things are built like bulls with their somewhat cute faces. They've got like a huge head, and the front of their body is just like, they look like a giant triangle because their face is really blunted, and then they just sort of taper off. And then on top, they have this very long dorsal fin that helps them swim extremely fast. Like, we're talking up to 90 kilometers an hour or almost 60 miles an hour swimming. So truly unbelievably quick.
Wow.
They honestly look to me like marlins almost, but without the super long pointy bill, just because of that very long dorsal fin. Like, it, I don't know, their whole shape just really screams fast, big ocean fish.
Yeah, for sure. And in the game, they look really colorful. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I was surprised to find out that they are actually that pigmented. Like, it's not exaggerated. If you saw them in like a supermarket stand, though, the color wouldn't be there. They would look just kind of gray, browny. But in the wild, when they're alive, they're this incredible bright yellow or lime green color. And then as you get to sort of like the top part of their body, like the dorsal part of their body, they're this vibrant blue. So we're seeing this countershading where if you look down at them when they're swimming in the water, they would blend in with the sea below. But if you were looking at them from like, you know, looking upwards towards the ocean surface, they would just be gleaming in the sun. And because they're so metallic, when they're swimming, these colors just really flash in this vibrant, bright way, which is probably why in many Spanish-speaking countries, mahi-mahi is called dorado, meaning golden. Not to be confused with the freshwater fish, which is also called dorado. So getting kind of confusing with the common names here, but yeah. We'll just keep calling them mahi-mahi for clarity's sake. I really do recommend actually watching fishing videos of mahi-mahi because watching them jump out of the water, they really look like some kind of mythical creature. And it makes me really understand why people would enjoy open water fishing. I'm like, this would be an exciting fish to catch. It looks beautiful. It gleams in the sun. And like, it just looks so magical and cool.
Oh, yeah. And how big do they get?
Pretty big, like 3 to 6 feet or 1 to 2 meters. Depending on their size, they will also school together. So smaller fish will tend to school in little groups because, of course, it's safer to travel in groups when you're small. But once they get pretty big, they might just hang out alone or in pairs. What's kind of interesting about these fish is they don't seem to live very long. On average, they'll live about 2 years. The oldest ones can get to 4 years, but they become sexually mature only around 4 to 5 months, so pretty quickly. And they grow super fast, like 20 pounds in a year. So you're seeing really heavy fish who just aren't even that old. And this size and beauty is one of the reasons why they're really popular sport fishing fish. What anglers will do is they'll sort of go out on their boats, they'll set up a number of lines hanging out the back of the boat, and then they drive the boat to Well, they'll look for a couple of things. One of the things they might look for are frigate birds. And the frigate birds are these huge, beautiful seabirds that look kind of like pterodactyls. And these birds will lead the anglers to the second thing that they're looking for, which are sargassum floats, kelp congregations, or other floating debris. Because these are the places where fish will congregate. Because the sargassum, or whatever is floating, offers a nice, safe place for fish to hide in the open ocean. And for mahi-mahi, it offers the perfect hunting location.
Right, so they're predators then?
Yeah, they will eat pretty much anything that comes along their path. So that often includes small fish or the juveniles of large fish or crustaceans. And in some cases, they'll also eat zooplankton. And they hunt primarily by sight. So they're hunting during the day, which again makes them a really ideal sport fishing fish. These fish have teeth to help them grab their prey, though the teeth are rather small and blunted. And they also have like a bunch of teeth on their tongue as well. And that's one of their identifying features for that species, is that the teeth on the tongue are in like a round patchy shape, which is kind of weird, but also kind of cool. So when anglers find these fish, they can throw out their lures kind of around the sargassum floats, and the mahi-mahi will latch on. And often mahi-mahi are hanging out together, so it's even easier to catch multiples at once. And then the anglers have very yummy fish to eat.
Yeah, I've had mahi-mahi burgers before, and I remember they were really good.
Yeah, everything. I mean, okay, I watched, like, if you can't tell, I watched a lot of fishing videos about them, and everyone very much agreed that they are, like, a super delicious fish. And I guess they're not, they don't have a super fishy flavor in, like, a bad way, you know? Like, it's just, I guess it's kind of a soft flavor. And really, people all around the world have eaten them for centuries. There's really cool imagery in ancient Greece of people eating them. And, you know, as I mentioned before, their range extends pretty much all around the world's oceans in tropical and temperate areas. So they've really been food for a huge number of humans over our history.
Other than humans, do they have any other predators?
It seems like mahi-mahi, especially when they're smaller, are definitely prey for large predatory fish like tuna, marlin, and swordfish. Some mahi-mahi have been found with spear wounds from marlin and swordfish, and that just sounds really awful to recover from, so I feel really bad for those fish. As I was mentioning before, sargassum or kelp little forests, they're really good spots for young fish to hide, and so the young mahi-mahi will also hide in these areas, and they'll be nice and safe from predators, so that's one of the ways they avoid being predated.
It sounds like they're being hunted a lot. How are their populations doing?
Surprisingly, okay. So it looks like mahi-mahi are currently least concerned, which is, I think, maybe one of the reasons I felt a little less guilty watching like a gajillion fishing videos about them. So they have a number of characteristics about their ecology and their life history that makes them pretty resistant to population decline. One of that is that they can reproduce really quickly. They reach that sexual maturity fast, as I said before, and the breeding season for mahi-mahi is pretty much the whole year, or at least when the water is relatively warm. So if they're already in like a tropical area, a place with warm water, they're going to be okay to breed pretty much the whole year. And they're able to spawn multiple times a year. So it's not just like they'll only do it once in the year. Even better, they produce between 80,000 to 1 million eggs in one go. So, you know, not all of those eggs, of course, are surviving, but it's still really impressive. Like, it's still a huge number of eggs to be producing multiple times a year for the whole year. So they're well equipped to deal with potential population disruptions. But as always, it's not to say that there's no risk at all. There is some concern of declining populations in certain areas of the East Pacific, but they think that this is less to do with just like harvesting and more to do with the fact that like El Niños will sort of make it harder to live in those areas. And then there's also fishing happening. So it's sort of a combo event. But overall, it seems like from what I could read from the IUCN Red List sources, They're doing pretty good, or at least like better than most of the fish we cover in the show.
That's good to know. So I guess there may be a more sustainable choice for fish to eat?
Yeah, maybe. I don't want to say that because I didn't. Let me just do a quick check. Mahi. What's the Monterey one? Monterey Bay Aquarium. Let's see what they say. They say avoid.
Avoid eating?
Yeah, why? Oh, you know what? Oh, I should have looked at this earlier. Okay, so they say, sorry to do this like so last minute, but let's take a look here, okay? It says, dolphin fish caught in the northeast or southeast Atlantic with floating object purse seines should be avoided. The population hasn't been fully assessed, so its status and fishing levels are unknown. Also, the cause of overfished big eye tuna, marlin, and at-risk sharks is a major concern. Management of bycatch impacts is ineffective because there are some conservation measures for turtles and sharks, but their effectiveness is unknown. Okay, so it sounds like they're recommending it largely because the methods to fish mahi-mahi can also catch a lot of bycatch. The other thing I did also read is that because they're a predator and they're a large fish, they can have higher levels of bioaccumulated toxins in their body. So that is also something to consider. Same thing with tuna, though. Like, you're going to have higher levels of things like mercury or, other toxins like that. So that's another thing I should have mentioned, too. So, you know, if you're maybe going out and catching like one mahi-mahi, that's probably totally fine. But I guess it comes back to the issue of like, is there such thing as sustainable fisheries?
Yeah.
It's so complicated. Just like, I don't know, maybe just like eat fish in moderation. Or like when you can, try and buy fish from like local anglers or go out fishing yourself.
Yeah. If you're in Canada, check out Skipper Otto.
Ooh.
It's like a fishing co-op. It's awesome. Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's all over the country now. And you buy into it. So like you put in a certain amount of money and then you get that much value out of it as they catch things. But it's all like local fishers. So yeah, I'd recommend it. My dad and I have been members since it started here in Vancouver. Like it used to be like so cool. One ship in Vancouver, one boat. And now it's all over the country.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. Well, I'm glad I read that. I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't look at Seafood Watch earlier. So I do apologize for that. IUCN usually doesn't lead me astray like that. But I guess now I have to like look at their different methods and see why IUCN and Seafood Watch disagree. Although it makes sense that like Seafood Watch would consider the impact on other, like IUCN is very species specific. So they're looking at the population of that species just by itself. They're not looking at the effect necessarily of like, yeah, what fishing will do to the other species around it. So I guess that kind of makes sense. Yeah, so that's mahi-mahi. It's fast, it's predaceous, and it's really pretty. And honestly, now I just really want to like go fishing. I don't know if I've ever felt that way, but at least I just really want to see them. Maybe I could just do that without fishing, but I don't really want to swim in the open ocean. So whatever. One day I'll go to Florida and see cool fish.
Yeah. If it's anything like when I saw tuna, like bluefin tuna while snorkeling, that was wild. They're so big.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Well, thank you so much, Olivia. That was really fun. And thanks everyone so much for listening. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon to get exclusive rewards, and make sure to check out the new sticker sheets on our Etsy shop.
You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
Tune in next week to learn more about the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing: New Horizons. Bye!
Bye!